It's that time of year again. Time to start your engines and hit the gas because Minitober is on at Mini of Manhattan. We're offering unbelievable deals on your favorite minis all month long. Get behind the wheel of the Mini you've been dreaming of and test drive it like you stole it. It's time to buckle up for Minitober now through October 31st. Visit us online at MiniNYC.com for special offers. Mini of Manhattan. Adventure starts here.
Warning. This show contains adult political themes and language. Liberals and little children should cover their ears.
Welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps, where negativity never sounded so good. Now here's your host.
Good morning and welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps. Make sure to follow the show at our website at libertyneversleeps.com. Be sure to follow our Twitter feed at Real Liberty Tom. And join us on Facebook at Real Liberty Never Sleeps on Facebook.com. Well, good morning. Suffice it to say, I did not win the $1.6 billion lottery, the handout that the states were giving away because I'm doing the show this morning, right? It's like that kind of money, you wouldn't hear from me again. Yeah, I mean, you win a $10,000 or a $20,000 or even a $1 million jackpot, I'd still do the show. $1.6 billion, I'm going to be at my super yacht off the coast of Cannes, you know, off the French Riviera or out in Ibiza, dead, you know, skinny dipping with the celebrities. I ain't going to be doing this show. Apparently, somebody won the $1.6 billion lottery. There was a winning ticket drawn in South Carolina. It's the only state that's reported it. So whoever won this thing won all of it. I mean, it could have been a group thing, you know, where they all agreed to share. So I don't know whether the actual winner is a single person or a group of people, but there is a winning ticket, unfortunately, for those of you who are playing the lottery. But, you know, every year, you know, these things happen. The lottery gets up to a huge number and somebody wins it. It's because the states, the people that run this lottery, changed the conditions of the lottery as originally determined by a vote by the people. You know, they never tell you this. The lottery that we have today is not the lottery you voted for. You voted for a certain lottery based on certain rules. It was specified in the voter thing. But as most of these votes for, you know, these mass democracy votes for lotteries happen, it always has a clause in it that the lottery commission can change the rules and conditions of the test as time permits and as time goes on. And it's gradually become nothing but a money-making endeavor for the state and not so much for education and not so much for the people playing the game. The odds of these things, of you hitting them, are something like 1 in 350 million. And I'm not going to go into, oh, it's more likely you get hit by lightning, that kind of thing. I want to point out that the jackpots are growing for a number of reasons. As I said, they changed the rules, making it more difficult to win. They also have increased the price of the tickets. Most tickets now are $2. I know the Mega Millions, I think it's $2 plus another buck for the Powerball. I don't know how it works. I don't play these things. With one exception, when it gets up to like a huge number, I'll play one ticket. That's all I did, is play one ticket. Or I should say my better half did. And they've also changed how much the tickets cost. I remember these tickets used to be $1. And they were like $1 million payout, $2 million, and then they would sometimes creep up to $30 or $40 million. Now they're $2 and $3 with Powerball and multiplier jackpots, and now that routinely gets up to hundreds of millions of dollars because of the way they changed it. It's not as much fun anymore. That's why, you know, that's why ticket sales are suffering. I'd much rather have a lottery where I have a statistically significant chance, like maybe 1 in 1 million. To win a few million dollars than I would had to play a game where it's 1 in 300 million to win $1 billion. I'd much rather have a lower payout and more chance of winning, you know. And they're always advertising these stupid things. As I've always said, these lotteries are a tax on the poor because that's who generally wins them. The people who play it on a regular basis are people living in trailer parks. And not that I want to denigrate people in trailer parks and mobile homes or whatever. It's just that's who it wins. And it always drives me crazy when they announce the winner and the guy comes on or the woman comes on TV and says all of the wrong things. You know, someone might win like $400 million, $500 million. Well, I'm going to carpet my double wide, and then I'm going to buy a new Mustang for my granddaughter. You know, and it's like, oh, my God, what are they doing? Recarpet your double wide? My God, if I won $1.6 million, you wouldn't even see me at this address anymore. I'd disappear. I hire a good lawyer to take care of the paperwork, actually to go pick it up and that kind of thing and deal with it and work out the details with the lottery commission. I would never set foot in my house again. You could burn it to the ground. I'd open the doors and say, take everything. I mean, when you get that kind of money, I'm not going to re-carpet. You know, I'm not going to redo my home. I'm going to be living in a super yacht somewhere. One of the things that people always seem to do when they win these lotteries is completely fail at life. It just... You know, a lottery is proof that a government program can't cure poverty. And let me explain this to you. Let me give you some examples of people who won the lottery. These are people who suddenly came into money, right? They were normal, ordinary, everyday people that won the lottery and came into money. Let me give you an example. All right, Christina Nagar. I looked these up. She was in Vegas. Said. She would buy a few penthouses as well as some new cars and a bunch of sneakers. A bunch of sneakers? That's what you would do with the money. Another person said, I don't know. I'd like to buy a new home. A $1.6 billion payout. So people have no concept of how to deal with money. And that's the problem. It's not about getting money. Poverty is not about not having enough money. Poverty is about making poor decisions. And here, let me give you an example of people who didn't make a good decision with the money. There was a guy named Abraham Shakespeare. And in 2006, he won $30 million from the state of Florida in the Florida State Lottery. Less than 3 years later, he was found buried under a concrete slab and no one could find the money. So that, I mean, it's like, what? What? And then in November 2015... Gregory Birch won $400,000 in the Illinois lottery. And he was, you know, seen with the check. I pulled up the story. 2 months later, he was killed by a targeted home invasion by gunmen demanding for his money. Why would you live in your same home? Why would you let people know where you lived? You suddenly come into $400,000? Somebody's going to come after you. Jack Whitaker. This is a famous story. He won the Powerball in 2002. Lost his daughter and granddaughter to drugs and blamed their sudden wealth for fueling their spending on drugs. He is quoted as saying, "My granddaughter is dead because of the money. You know, my wife said she wished she had torn the ticket up. Well, I wish we had torn the ticket up too." These are true stories. People are not poor because they don't have money. People are poor because they make poor decisions. And winning the lottery, just like handing someone who doesn't have food or doesn't have housing or doesn't have clothing or phones or whatever, handing them things doesn't solve their problem. And proof of that is all these lottery winners. I remember there was a lottery winner right here in Phoenix. I think he was in the community of Chandler. It's a bedroom community outside of Phoenix. He won one of those homes in the home and garden event. You know, I don't know if you know about these things. You know, they come to your door. It was like Home and Garden TV. Oh, you want a new home, a brand new home? They were people who were really poor. I mean, they were living in like a shack in Mesa. I don't know what the story was. They were bankrupt. They owed money. And they won a new home. And they had this big TV show. And they rolled out, you know, how you stand in front of the home and they open the curtains, like kind of thing. Well, they ended up losing the home and going bankrupt again because of it, because they made poor decisions about how to maintain the home, how to pay off debt. They borrowed against the home, and then they got into debt using the borrowed money, that kind of thing, and people took advantage of them too because they would use that money for other things than what they should have. They had no visible means of support or income, so they couldn't even pay the second on the home. It was a complete catastrophe. And then when they repossessed the home, they found all kinds of things wrong with it. They completely destroyed the house because they treated it as not something they earned. They treated it as something that they won. You know, and it's just like renters don't treat the property the same way as owners. It's all comes down to poor decision making, and this it just drives me crazy because it's like all the wrong people win the kind of money. Where did their thoughts go? Buying new cars, a bunch of sneakers? We're talking $1.6 billion, for Christ's sake, right? You're not going to be thinking about a new car. You're completely changing your life. You don't buy a new car. You get drivers to drive you everywhere with security people, for God's sakes. It's all the wrong people. It's never anybody who knows what to do with it. Right? It's never somebody who knows, well, I'm going to structure my finances so that I'm going to live off the income of this money, and then I'm going to reserve the money in trust funds so that it's secure and no one can get at it. You know, that kind of thing. No one ever says that. No, they all say, I'm going to buy a new car. I'm going to buy a new Mustang. I'm going to buy a few penthouses. Like, what would you use a few penthouses for? Right? I suppose you could live one on each coast and travel between the two, but I could think of a lot of better ways to spend the money than a few penthouses. It just annoys the hell out of me, right? It's never anybody that uses the money appropriately. You know, you could say what you want about people like Bill Gates, for instance, who spend their money, you know, doing all kinds of charitable work or political work that you don't agree with. But the guy knows how to spend his money, right? He's going to be wealthy the rest of his life, and he has structured himself to maintain that wealth and to maintain his lifestyle, which is spent on, you may not agree with the politics of it, but they are charitable endeavors or they are productive endeavors. In other words, he's putting his money to work both for himself and for society. And maybe, as I said, you may not think it's but nevertheless, that's what you do when you have that kind of money. You structure yourself in a certain way. You make plans on how to deal with the money, on what to do with it after your death, how to structure yourself so that you never have to worry about earning an income again. And that's why I'm against, for the most part, charitable functions in government. I'm against food stamps in general. I mean, in general. We're not talking about handing out somebody stamps for 30 days. We're talking about a lifestyle of food stamps, people who are working minimum wage. I'm against most social programs, most redistribution of wealth programs. I'm not against Social Security and Medicare, and I'll tell you why. We're going to talk about that. For the bulk of the show, we're going to talk about how government doesn't recognize the dangers that it puts its own people in, about the misinformation and lies that government tells you. Because really, my political theory about conservatism stems from a fear and loathing of government, that it never really does anything well. In fact, in most cases, when government involves itself in something, it makes it worse. And the lottery in microcosm is basically an example of it, because lotteries do not make people wealthy. What they do is make people miserable, for the most part. You talk to lottery winners. There have been a number of articles on this, a number of TV shows on it. The most lottery, the ones that win the big ones, right? We're not talking about a guy who wins $10,000. But the people who win $500,000 or more, for the most part, are sorry they ever won it. And generally, the majority of lottery winners eventually go bankrupt, no matter how much money they have. And that's why I'm against social programs, because it's not going to solve it. Handing a homeless guy a home doesn't solve his homelessness, because he'll end up homeless again. Handing a hungry man a bunch of food doesn't solve his hunger, because he gets hungry again next week when he eats all the food up. Life is about delayment of gratification. Life is about a skill, learning skills and providing for yourself. And no government program is going to do that for you, just like no lottery is going to make you wealthy. And we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about how the left exploits that and gains votes by it. Because we've got an election coming up in 15 or 16 days, And it's a pretty good bet. I mean, it's a 50-50 chance that the Democrats will win back the House, maybe a little bit less that they'll win back the Senate. And if that happens, we're going to go back to what we had under Barack Obama and other presidents like Jimmy Carter. And I can't stand the thought of that. The thought of the big tax windfalls that I'm preparing to get over the next few years because the Trump tax refund. I'm frightened to think of what'll happen to the market come November, 5th after this election. What will happen if the Democrats win the House and the Senate? What will happen to Donald Trump if he gets impeached? What will be the country look like under a Pence presidency? And then, God forbid, somebody like Elizabeth Warren, Barack Obama, or some clone of Barack Obama, or God forbid, Hillary Clinton should become president. I don't know what would become of this country. I watch these caravans coming up, from Mexico. And we'll talk about that too and what that will result in. Anyway, let's take a break. And I want to talk a little bit about Medicare and Social Security. We'll be right back. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support.
Now I'm returning, showing off a smile. I met all the girls and I love myself a few. And to my surprise, like everything else that I've been through, they opened up my eyes.
And we're back. I'm vehemently opposed to any kind of a windfall program where government pays for your housing, pays for your food, pays for your phone. In some cases with medical care, that's something I support. Medicaid, when people can't support themselves because of their disability, because of their illness, that kind of thing. It's kind of like, well, society should take care of people that have contributed to it, right? People who were born a certain way and they have no out in life. People who are perpetually destitute. Nobody wants to see those people suffer. That's an inhumane, humanity thing. But providing them a cell phone so they can get a job, or providing them housing or food for years and years and years when they're working, let's say, at Walmart, but won't take a second job to solve their own hunger, that I have an issue with, all right? Because there's a difference. Let's take, for example, Medicare. What is Medicare? I mean, as it originally designed, Medicare was designed because old people or elderly people, people over the age of 65 or 70, couldn't find health insurance because health insurance companies knew it was too high a risk and people were getting priced out of the health insurance that they had. People who had health insurance when they were 50 or 55 would find that the premiums were going up past the point where they could pay for them because the cost of medical care was going up. And so they designed a program that would provide a health insurance program. In other words, a way to pay for the health care of elderly people. Now, if it was a handout, I would have been upset at it. Medicare as designed, though, is a tax that we pay. And a tax that we pay that benefits everyone, because everyone benefits from Medicare if they make it to 65 or older. That's not a redistribution of wealth. That's not socialism. That's something that you pay for and then you collect on. It's just like your garbage or your police or your fire. Those aren't socialism. Socialism is a redistribution of wealth where they take wealth from a certain group of people and give it to another. Well, Medicare is not that. Everyone pays and everyone collects. And it varies depending on your health and depending on your age, whether you make it to 65. But so does the tax. That varies based on your income. If you don't earn an income, you don't pay tax into the program and so forth. You don't pay tax in long enough, you become uninsured. A lot of people don't know that. It takes about 8 to 10 years. But by and large, when the time when you get to 65, you're going to get Medicare or Social Security. Okay, these programs are paid for. They are not socialism. They are not redistribution of wealth. And they are not an entitlement, because that word gets thrown about a lot. They're becoming that. The Democrats are changing the terms of Medicare, Social Security, and whatnot. For instance, a lot of people don't know this, and this is constantly the lie that the left tells you about Medicare and Medicaid and Obamacare. People who are uninsured can't get insurance. Well, let's look at that for a second, because people who are, I mean, this was before Obamacare. People who were uninsured had a lifetime illness like cancer, heart attack, stroke, and they say, well, they can't get insurance now, and that's not fair. Well, you could. Medicare covered it. Medicare covered a lot of illnesses where you were perpetually in a state. For instance, strokes and things like that. You were put on Medicare. There are terms and qualifications for it. In other words, you have to be in the system for a while. It takes 2 years. You have to be disabled for 2 years or more. It has to be a situation where it's a known illness. For instance, Lou Gehrig's disease. Give you an example. You get Lou Gehrig's disease and you get it for like more than a year, or I think it's 18 months, where the doctor says, you have this illness, you may be terminally ill, we don't know what the progress is, blah, blah, blah. You have ALS, you get Medicare. Guaranteed from the state. This was before Obamacare. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people didn't even ask for it, by the way. They never applied. A vast majority of people would just use their own insurance. There were a number of illnesses on Medicare. You can go on their website, go on the Medicare website, and there is a whole list, childhood congenital defects, particular heart conditions, certain types of cancers, that are guaranteed, you know, terminally ill, that sort of thing. There's a whole raft of illnesses that are covered by Medicare. And again, you have to have the illness for 2 years. It's a two-year qualifying period. But you can get insurance in the meantime. There was also a program, a pool, which you can apply for. You have a lifetime illness. It isn't one of the ones covered by Medicare. You would go to your state insurance pools and you would apply. Most people didn't know that. I used to sell insurance. I used to tell people, hey, listen, you can apply for the state pool, because they would say, I can't get insurance. Can you help me? I've got this illness. Well, no, an insurance company is going to take it, but the state pool will. Now, they had to pay. The usual premium was about $1,100, $1,200 a month, but it's a lifetime illness. And then people still didn't want to pay for it. So that's how we ended up with Obamacare. People just wanted, you know, the $50 a month health insurance that everyone has that is healthy. Or they didn't buy it when they were healthy. But Medicare itself is a program that you pay for. Same with Social Security. Social Security isn't a redistribution of wealth. In fact, Milton Friedman, great economist, Nobel Prize winning economist, when he got into the math of Social Security, it actually benefits the wealthy. Really, no. If you really study the program, who is collecting on the program and who is paying into the program, the program benefits the wealthy. You know why? The biggest reason why Social Security benefits the wealthy is because those are the ones that live the longest. They don't work manual labor jobs. They work in white collar jobs. And traditionally, historically, from a statistical point of view, people who have money, or the more money you have, typically live longer and have longer lifestyles, and therefore collect from the program longer. And they never discuss it. It's not a redistribution of wealth. You pay for it. And when you combine Medicare and Social Security, both the employee's version, because you know you only pay half the Medicare tax, half the Social Security tax, your employer pays the other half. When you combine it, it's something like 50 to 60% of your paycheck, depending on your tax bracket. Half of your money goes to these two programs. These are programs that you pay for. And don't tell me, oh, you collect more out of Social Security and Medicare than you ever put in. That's nonsense. If you were to take that money, if you were to take half of your paycheck and you were to put it into a program of savings, you would have millions of dollars at age 65, and you could pay for your own retirement. You could pay for your own Medicare. If the government said to me tomorrow, we're going to give you the money that you've already put into the system in a savings bond that matures at 65, whatever it is you put in, and then you can do what you want with the matured savings bond, which should be millions of dollars. I've been paying into Social Security since I was 16. Assuming that they say I would absolutely opt out of that. Are you kidding me? I would do it in a minute. For instance, a lot of people don't take this into consideration, but I do when I think about the money. When you look at Social Security, right, think about all of the money that you paid from now, whenever age you are, until age 65, right? What happens if you die at age 67, 68, or even 72? What happens to all that money? It goes back to the state. It doesn't go to your heirs. It doesn't go to your surviving spouse. Your surviving spouse, I think, gets $155 from the Social Security Department. It goes to who? The state. And it goes back into the fund, so to speak. There used to be a lockbox. It doesn't exist anymore. That's the truth of it. So if you gave me a savings bond, says, okay, Tom, you're going to opt out of Social Security. You're not going to pay any more tax. You're going to get a savings bond worth, I don't know, let's say $500,000. And it's going to mature at 65. In other words, at 65, you get cash. You turn in your savings bond and you get the money from the government. I can take that money and invest it, but I can also pass it on to my heirs, or I can pass it on to my surviving spouse, whoever survives me, whoever I choose. That's a huge windfall for society, and that's what the state is collecting, and they don't tell you that. Then, there, of course, there's the fact that they go, oh, you collect more. Let's say you live to 85 or 86. You collect way more of Social Security. No, you don't. If you were to take the money, as I said, and put it to 65 in your own retirement fund, you would have a much larger retirement. I've done articles where I've done the math, and I've taken a person who earns an average income. The average median income, I think, in the country is, what, 34,000, 36? Might be a little higher now. And then I multiplied it out by the amount of years from age, and I went from age 18. I gave people the benefit of the government, the benefit of the return. And I put it in a fund that paid 1.5%. I mean, really safe, right? CDs, mutual fund investments that are low yield, government bond funds, stuff like that, right? And I put an average rate of return of 1%. Your paycheck, in other words, your Social Security check would now be a paycheck from your investments, was nearly twice as high. And then people say to me, well, what about if you get disability? Then I factored in an average cost of a disability program. In other words, you buy a disability insurance policy that works the same way as Social Security, and you don't have to go through all the trouble of collecting on it. You just apply to the insurance company, which is much easier getting your money from an insurance company than it is from the state. You would have still a check maybe 40 to 50% higher than what you're getting. That's the difference. That's how much money the state's making on this thing, and they dip into that fund all the time. That's what they're not telling you. Same with Medicare. You could buy an insurance policy at age 65 or 70, and I've run the actuarial tables because they do exist. Could you buy insurance? Yeah. If you had a $2 or $3 million kitty of money, because that's what it would be, 30% of your paycheck, for instance, over a lifetime, over 40 years, it would be a $2 or $3 million. You'd easily be able to afford an insurance policy. $2 or $3 million at age 65? Would generate you $300,000 a year until you die for paying insurance. You could buy whatever insurance policy you want for $200,000 or $300,000 a year. It's ridiculous. You're getting ripped off all the time. That's why Republicans constantly are talking about reform. The program doesn't work. It's a ripoff. But see, when you talk about reform in this the way that I just did, and I said, well, we need to reform the program because the state, believe it or not, is going bankrupt on these programs which rip you off left and right. That's how bad government is. When any Republican says, you know what, we need to take the people that are entering the program now and say to them, well, the benefit's now going to kick in at 67 or 69 or 70, or we're going to bump your tax and give you a little lower benefit. You know, something to rebalance, because the both funds, Medicare and Social Security, are going bankrupt over the long haul when we look at it from a historical point of view. Something has to be done about it. When you talk about it, they say, The left comes out with advertising and says, oh, they're going to take away your Social Security and Medicare. Here in Arizona, they're running an ad where Martha McSally basically says the same thing to an audience. It says, you know, Social Security, I would do away with it. It's a Ponzi scheme. It really is when you analyze the math of it. But they take that little snippet and then they put it in the commercial and they go, Martha McSally wants to take away your Social Security, wants to take your Medicare. No Republican in Congress, in the White House, in your state or local government, no Republican ever has voted to take away Social Security and Medicare. Not one. Not one time, not one vote, not one bill. But the Democrats tell you that. Oh, we want to take away Social Security. We want to take away Medicare. Jesus, please do. I mean, if they were to say tomorrow, it's no more, here's a savings bond, oh my God, I'd be so happy. So don't tell me that the Republicans are trying to take away Medicare or Social Security. They're trying to make the system work for the American people so that you're not getting ripped off all the time, so that the programs are survivable. I support Medicare and Social Security. I paid for it. It's something that I'm paying. It's just like I support police, fire, garbage protection. But the program as designed that has been changed over the years through manipulation, through the Democrats voting on, oh, well, let's give Medicare to these people. Let's give Social Security to these kind of disabled people. Let's give this to that person and this to that. They've bankrupted it. They've ruined it. It's the Democrats that are destroying Medicare and Social Security, not Republicans. That's what they also aren't telling you. So it's these lies, and that they have cut their teeth politically over the last 50 years on. Republicans are trying to take away Medicare. No, we're trying to give it to you. We're trying to make it worth something. We're trying to make it so that it's stable. We're trying to make it so that it's not an entitlement, where it's a program that you pay for and that you benefit, hopefully, when you age 65. We need to move on. I'm going to tell you about another lie, the caravans, the quote-unquote caravan, like it's a circus traveling to our border. We'll talk about that next. We'll be right back. Have you been watching the news lately? They've been talking about these quote-unquote caravans, like suggesting like it's some traveling circus from Barnum and Bailey, you know? Oh, these people just want to flee the lack of jobs. Well, I don't remember people who couldn't find work during the Obama years in, let's say, the Ohio River Valley. I don't remember them caravanning with a flag from the state of Pennsylvania, wandering into California looking for work. I don't remember that. Okay? It's not about jobs. There are some people that say, well, they're fleeing violence down in Honduras. Well, why don't they clean up their own country? Right? I mean, there was violence here in America. Take a look at Chicago. Do you see the residents of Chicago marching down into St. Louis or Florida or Arizona because the violence is so bad? Violence up in Chicago is horrible. But they say, we got to be, you know, Christians. We have to welcome all of these people inside our borders, regardless of what our laws are, regardless that we are as stewards of it. In other words, congressmen and other leaders, you're stewards of the law. You're supposed to be maintaining the law. Don't worry about that. We have to allow these people in, right? Meanwhile, these are the same people that tell us when white people do it against Native Americans, you know, because they're always saying we were illegal aliens, right? Remember, you know, that argument? We're suddenly terrible people. But when brown people do it from Latin America, oh, that's suddenly okay. That's a caravan. Those are not illegal immigrants. The double standard is astonishing in this. I'm watching these films or these caravans, and they interview these people, and they hate America. They hate Trump. They talk about it openly to interviewers. Oh, Trump is the Antichrist, blah, blah, blah. I post these stories so that you see them. So you don't think I'm making this up. I post them to our Facebook site. And these are from reputable news sources. This is not like XYZ blogger talking about this. This is like CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, doing interviews with people. Oh, Trump is the Antichrist. Trump is this horrible person. America is this terrible country. Capitalism is a horrible situation. And all kinds of horrible statements, burning the American flag, carrying the Honduran flag in front of them. I got news for you. These aren't caravans. They're partisans. Have you ever heard that term, partisans? I've been saying a lot on Facebook and Twitter, but I'm not getting any ground on it. People don't recognize what I'm saying. Let me describe for you what Webster says about partisan. Partisan is a member of an irregular military force formed to oppose control of an area by a foreign power or an army of occupation of some kind of insurgent activity. What could be more insurgent than going into a country, benefiting from its laws, benefiting from its social policies, benefiting from its programs, and not contributing anything back? 50% of illegal immigrants are on welfare of some sort, food stamps, Medicaid, that sort of thing. Do you know what the burden is on our court system from illegal immigration? To say nothing of all the violent crime. And I don't think illegal immigrants as a whole, as a population, are criminals. I honestly do believe they're coming here because things are lousy where they're coming from. But that's not the solution. There's a lot better ways to solve that, like, you know, getting rid of your leader. I've always said this. You want to really turn this thing around? Start taking these people that are quote-unquote members of caravan, which are really partisans, and handing them guns with copies of our Constitution and sending them back home. And say, hey, listen, make your country like this. Here's our document. Here's the way we built our country. You make your country like this, all those problems go away. The drug cartels, the lack of jobs, all of that is a function of socialism. That's your country. Your country is socialist. Don't bring it here. But they are marching here to bring it here. That's why the Democrats aren't saying anything. It's not they're coming here to vote. I tried to explain that on my show a couple days ago, right? I said, look, they're not coming here to vote. They're not coming here to illegally vote in some election. That's a nonsense. What they're doing is they're providing a tool by which the Democrats can put illegal votes into the ballot box. We all know that ballot box stuffing occurs. I don't want to hear from people that it doesn't. It happens from both sides. There are various ways that you could put more votes in the ballot box than people voting. But when you get right down to it, you have to show evidence. In other words, when there's investigation to votes, you have to provide a matching documentation, a person, a live person, for that bogus vote. That's what they use these people for, right? The ones with bogus social security numbers, bogus identification through identity theft or however it's done. And then the live person actually exists who is paying taxes. That's how it's verified. Is there somebody paying taxes? Is there somebody at that address? And that's how they use these people for. So they don't actually vote. They don't actually go to a ballot box and stick a vote in. They don't actually vote in an election because it's really difficult. Believe it or not, even without voter ID, it's not so easy to actually go into a ballot box and vote illegally. But it is easy to stuff a ballot box and then match up a person with it. That's easy, especially when there's no voter ID laws, especially when they verify through employment records. It's a bunch of nonsense. So these people that are coming here are partisans. They are coming here to damage our nation intently. There's an intent to destroy our country. If you don't believe me, watch the interviews. They do not like capitalism. They do not like the way we are running our country. They believe that the United States is founded by people who are illegally squatting on the land that's here. They believe we're the occupying force, that they want to take back that country. Read some of the documentation of some of the groups that are helping fund these quote-unquote caravans. Groups that are affiliated with La Raza, who believes that the white man, that the English people conquered America and that we're occupying it. These are the people that are promoting the people that are coming here. Look at the films. I'm not saying ask believe me. Look at the films yourself. Where are the women? Where are the children? There's a certain percentage of women and children that are in these caravans, but by and large, it's young, healthy men. And they're usually under the age of 35. The vast majority of people. That's a soldier, man. That's an irregular army. They're coming here with the flag in front of their column. If you don't recognize it for what it is, you're as bad as the Romans were when they sacked Rome. And I've told this story a number of times. If you don't believe me, again, look up the historical record from the historians of the period of the sacking of Rome, the fall of the Roman Empire. The enemy army was led by a general called Alaric, A-L-A-R-I-C. Look him up. The Romans at the time did not believe that Alaric and the horde of barbarians that he came with did not believe they would ever enter the gates of Rome. The group of barbarians led by Alaric did so without weapons and marched into the city of Rome. They were laughing and joking about it the whole time. It was a caravan. And then when they got to Rome, they raped it. They destroyed it. They sacked it, as it was in the terms. They stole the loot, ran people out, took things. By and large, they didn't do it to the majority of the citizens of Rome, only the wealthy people. If you think I'm making it, please look it up yourself. And the Roman leaders at the time said, oh, these guys aren't a threat. They just want food. There's no food up in the forests of Germany. There's no land up there. There's no place. They just want to benefit from being a Roman citizen. They actually said that. What do you hear from the left today? The same thing. It's the same thing. I try to warn people. They're coming here to benefit from our society and loot it in a legal way. It's the same thing. Looting doesn't mean banging down windows and tearing up statues and breaking open. That's for the movies. Looting is taking from a people who earned money to people who don't. And that's what's going on. They're coming here and doing it through various legal means. We're being looted. They're taking the vast wealth of the United States that we've built up over the last 250 years and saying it's theirs because we somehow got the money by doing something unethical, illegal, or exploitative of third world nations. And they want to benefit from it, and they didn't earn it. That's all it is, folks. You're being looted. They don't need guns. You're going to let them in. Why do you think they're marching up to Tijuana in California? The vast majority of the caravan people are moving toward Tijuana. It's 2,000 miles out of their way. They could go to the closest border crossing, I think is Laredo, in the eastern half of Texas, which would have been, I think, about 1,300 miles shorter if you take the eastern route. They're not doing that. They're going through a friggin' hurricane up the west coast of Mexico. Why do you think that is? And then through Tijuana and through our gates there. Why are they going? The vast majority of people are going through Tijuana, California. Because California is welcoming them. California laws are much more beneficial. California will provide services to them. California has said publicly, we welcome illegal aliens. They're allowing them to vote in school board elections, which is the worst possible place that you can allow an illegal immigrant to vote. Why do you think they're doing that? It's because of that. It's because they're welcome there. They know the gates are open there. If you close your borders, if you build a border wall, if you say, no, there's no sanctuary cities here, there's no sanctuary states, there's no welcome here at the inn, those caravans would not exist. And yet people just willingly say, oh, it's okay, we have to be good Christians. Well, we shouldn't. And Senator Kamala Harris was saying, we shouldn't vilify people for coming here because they're hungry and they're... Well, what about vilifying the American citizens who built this country? What about vilifying people who say, I believe in borders and I want a wall? Why are you vilifying them? Why are you calling them racists? Why are you calling them all kinds of names? Because that's all the left does, is call people names. You're a bunch of nationalists. You're a bunch of racists. You're a bunch of misogynists. Every time. That's all they have. Senator Elizabeth Warren, same thing. You're racist. You're misogynists. You're haters. Open the gates. Let the barbarians in. Let's talk about that next, about the name calling. And about what Trump said about nationalism. We'll be right back. It was what I wanted now. And if we're victims of the night. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. You know, Donald Trump, in a campaign speech, a rally, said, well, I'm a nationalist. I'm not a globalist. CNN immediately labeled him a racist. Because the term nationalist has been so perjured over the years. It was co-opted and corrupted by the Nazi Empire, the Third Reich. National socialism. And nationalism took on a very ill connotation in the years subsequent from World War II, mainly because Germany took nationalist pride to an extreme. And as a result, it became synonymous with white supremacy. And so CNN and many other news organizations and political pundits are saying this was a dog whistle to saying that Donald Trump is a white nationalist and a racist. It's nothing of the sort. I looked up, what is nationalism? You know, Webster's dictionary is really good. They're constantly changing it, by the way. I've caught Webster's online changing definitions when it suddenly became popular to mention what is the Webster's dictionary of nationalism. And nationalism is nothing more than a pride in one's own country. That's all it is. And a nationalist is someone who defends their own country over other international interests. That's what it says. So that'll be changed soon because now people are sending that around. There's nothing wrong with being a nationalist, believing in your own country other than us. But the problem is it was taken to an extreme under national socialism. It was used as a weapon to define the Nazi Empire. It's not anything of the sort. Nationalism is simply believing in that your own country is superior to others in various ways and then defending it. I've defended it many times here on this show about why and what makes American culture, laws, and society superior to other countries. It's the way our Constitution is structured. It's what our people believe in. It's the fact that we built our own nation under self-governance, while other nations built it under kings and tyrants. That is why I believe America is the greatest country in the world. And still, it's not got nothing to do with the school system or our road system or the fact that Chinese trains are better, so China is better. And it's nonsense. It's ridiculous. American exceptionalism is nationalism and vice versa. Believing in one's own country. That's all Trump meant. He is the president of the United States, not the president of the world, despite what everybody tries to say. That's the problem. That they simply use name-calling as a solution to their woes. The Democrat Party is in its death throes. The problem is the American people are being convinced with lies and name-calling. They're trying to destroy your Medicare. They're trying to destroy your Social Security. You should see the ads. They got little old ladies, you know, with a sad face going, "What? Republicans are trying to take away my Social Security, like we're going to put them back on cat food, the way the Democrats had it done in the beginning." They call us racists. They call us all kinds of names. I was having a discussion with somebody, an interesting discussion on Facebook. And he was saying all kinds of bizarre things. All Trump is this awful racist. Trump is this awful person and blah, blah, blah. And I said, "Well, are you going to vote in the next election?" "Yes, I'm going to. I'm making sure I'm going to vote. I'm going to vote for this person." And I said, "Why are you voting for him?" "Well, we've always had a Republican in this district, and I want a Democrat." "Oh, okay. That's a fair statement. Why do you want the Democrat?" "Well, because of Trump." "Well, what did he do that was racist? What did he do?" "Well, I don't agree with his policies on trade. I don't agree with his policies on international relations. I don't agree with his policies on economy." "You mean the economy that's on fire? The one that has the lowest unemployment rate in history, in American history?" "Yes, that one." "Okay. If you could take that opinion, that's fine." You know, when the Republicans lose in the fall, assuming that we lose the House or the Senate or whatever, I'm not going to march. I'll accept it. I got to convince people to get out to vote. And if I didn't do a good enough job, they're going to win. But the Democrats can't accept that. The Democrat doesn't say, "Well, I think Trump's economy is a bad economy. I think that we should pay more taxes. I think that we should do this or do that." They don't say that. They say, "I'm going to vote because I hate Trump." Why? Well, because the media told them to. I mean, you turn on any news station other than Fox News. You turn on TV shows, sitcoms. I talked about this the other day. Entertainment. Newscasts, sportscasts, you're watching a football game, they start talking about Trump or talking about how Trump's administration did this or did that. You put on MTV, you put on TMZ. TMZ, which is supposed to be talking about celebrities, talks about Trump all the time, every day, in a negative way. They did a study, something like 86% of entertainment and media is against Trump. When you put that all day, you people are brainwashed. That's what it is. That's the definition of it. They talk about Trump being a racist. Well, what has he done that's racist? Give me a specific policy. And the most often when you get somebody who actually says it, right, who actually comes out and says an actual policy, they talk about, "Well, he tried to close our borders to Muslims." Well, Muslim isn't a race. Muslim is a set of beliefs and an ideology, Islam. Is a religion. That's a set of beliefs. When you confront them with that, then they block you. Or they call you names. "Well, you must be one of those Trump supporters. You must be a Trump-tard." "Well, he supports the destruction of public education." "You mean the one which pays professors six figures to tell people to go vote, and here's the person to go vote for? You mean that education system? You mean in the education system where the majority of kids coming out of high school cannot read and write at the proper level that they used to? You mean that one?" "Yes, that one." "Okay." That's what it's come down to, name calling. "You're a racist. You're a misogynist." That's another one. The war on women. Even though the Democrats with Ted Kennedy have the first confirmed kill on the war on women, they often talk about how women policies of the Republican are anti-woman. Why? "Well, because they don't allow me to have an abortion." Really? So you think having the legal right to commit murder, that's a pro-woman position? Do you believe that castrating men, making men less than men, that's a solution to anything? "But yeah, but Trump." Okay. "Well, Trump said he was going to grab a woman's pussy." You mean he had a private conversation with somebody in the back of a bus that he was essentially bragging that he could do something, which he never has ever been caught doing, either publicly or privately. You think that means that he does that? Okay. You mean that that's the same political party when Ted Kennedy and other people like Joe Biden grope women and children? You don't say anything about that. Why don't you apply the same standard? It's the double standard, the hypocrisy of the name-calling that bothers me, not the name-calling itself. Because, you know, Republicans call Democrats' name all the time. I mean, we laugh about it. I post pictures of Facebook of the purple-haired chick who and the jokes at her expense, whoever she is. I do that all the time. That's not the issue. Name-calling isn't the issue. It's the hypocrisy of it. It's not accepting for things for what they are either. Well, Trump is ruining the economy. Right, with the lowest unemployment rate. Trump is a racist. Well, because blacks have the lowest unemployment rating in history. There are more black billionaires than ever before. America's a racist nation. We had a black president. White people often voted for blacks in many elections around this country, including the president of the United States. But that's a problem. It's a problem that 52% of white women voted for Donald Trump. Why? You're saying that women aren't smart enough? You're saying that blacks aren't smart enough? You're saying that Hispanics are only good for picking lettuce because you always describe it as that? What does name calling get you? Well, it gets votes because people buy it. Negative ads work. That's why I said, why do politicians run negative ads? They work. People listen to them. Yeah, that guy's a so-and-so. That guy's this. That guy's that. That woman is this. That woman is that. Negative ads work. That's why they've run them. That's why elections have gotten nastier and nastier, too. It's because they work. It's because that's how you vote. You want things to change? Don't vote that way. Don't buy into it. Take a look at facts. If you want the negative ads to end, examine the facts. Unemployment's low. Stock market's up. You have more spendable income in your pocket because the taxes have been lowered. It's easier to start a business because of regulations. These are facts about the economy. They are undeniable. Even stories from CNN, CNBC, Reuters, AP all state the simple fact. All these things are happening. Well, it's Barack Obama. Really, he hasn't been in office in 2 years. None of his policies are in force. Republicans took 1,000 seats away from him in his 8 years of presidency. They've continued to do that in the last 2 years. Republicans are basically controlling the economy. How is Barack Obama the winner? How is Trump so awful that Barack Obama feels it's necessary to claim credit for what he's done? No one asks that question. They just call him names. Yeah, but he grabbed someone's pussy. Really? When did that happen? Well, he talked about it in the back of a bus. Right. Like you never bragged about women to another guy, right? Okay. That's what I mean. It's the disconnection. The name calling is a disconnection. You should see celebrities on Twitter. F-bombs, S-bombs. Not that I'm afraid of blue language. I say it here on the show. That's why I put a warning in the beginning of the show. Right? It's just that it's endless, and that's the only thing they say. Blankety-blank this, blankety-blank that. Banging on the doors of the Supreme Court, the hysterics, the craziness. What are the policies of the left? I don't know. What is Elizabeth Warren saying that she's going to do for America? I don't know. We'll get rid of Trump. Says that a lot. Trump is a terrible person. What is Kamala Harris telling us all the time? You're terrible people for not allowing illegal aliens to march into your country and take things from you. You're the terrible person. You're the villain for stating facts, for stating that there's a column of 7,000 plus people coming to our country with their flag of their country in front of them, claiming that they're going to come into our country because we're terrible people and take from us and benefit from us and change us, and that our president, our leader, is the Antichrist. We're the bad guys. Name calling. And people are going to vote for that in the fall. That's why you need to get out and vote. That's why I told people during the Trump election, vote for Trump. Not because he was a great guy. Not because he was a strict conservative or he had the Republican ideology down pat. It was because he told things like it was. Because he said, I'm going to make America great. I'm going to restore low taxes, less regulation. I'm going to stand up for America on the worldwide front, and I'm going to tell these little podunk countries to go to F themselves. That's what I want. I want somebody that stands up for me, stands up for our country. And our country is full of blacks, Hispanics, and Asians. He speaks for them, too. Nationalistic pride covers them, too. Covers the Asian in San Francisco, covers the black in Phoenix, covers the Hispanic in Miami, covers all of them. They're Americans too. Don't they deserve it? Don't they deserve not being called racist? Let's take a break and let me wrap it up. We'll be right back.
We may never love like this again, but through the day.
Only got a few minutes left. You know, the race card is played all the time. All the time, even when you don't know. PETA saying that you're a white supremacist for drinking milk. I posted ads. Whoopi Goldberg got milk. Venus and Serena Williams got milk. Are they white supremacists too? The race card is very easy to play because what? It's one of the most hateful things you can be. A child molester or a racist, right? It's hard to basically come out and call someone a child molester without proof. Easy, though, by calling them a racist. It's easy. Now they're defining racism as simply being white. They're saying, well, you have white privilege. I'd like to know about it. I don't see anybody getting into college like Harvard and whatnot. I don't see any of them getting in because they're white. I don't see anybody putting on the application, yeah, I'm a Caucasian. Can I get this benefit? Can I get that benefit? No. Elizabeth Warren herself put it, she was a Native American. Why do you think she did that? Because it was an in. It was an advantage, something she had in her background that she could at least claim so that there wouldn't be proof of fraud. I had high cheekbones. I got 1/1000th of my blood as Native American, so I'm a Cherokee. It's ridiculous. It's bizarre. It really is bizarre. Remember Rachel Dolezal claiming she was black? Self-described black. Remember that story? But that's not cultural appropriation. You know, they're saying it's cultural appropriation when we dress up as a Native American in Halloween. When a kid dresses up as a Native American, that's cultural appropriation. But if you claim that you're a Native American to get into Harvard, that's not cultural appropriation. No, that's okay because it's a liberal. It's a double standard. It's not the actual name calling, right? It's saying that you're something that I'm in myself and I'm not going to admit it. That's the problem I have with it. I'm okay with just name calling. It's okay just to make goof on somebody because of what they believe in or what they say or how they dress. That's all right. That's humor, right? We all watch the movie Blazing Saddles. We all laugh. Or I guess we don't laugh anymore at it. You couldn't make that movie today. But when you say that so-and-so is a racist, and then you don't look at yourself for doing exactly the same thing, for enacting racist policies, like saying one person should benefit because of the color of their skin while another one should, that is what bothers me. It's the double standard. It's the hypocrisy of it all. It's the lies and misinformation that provide all the time. They don't want to talk about the economy because they can't. They don't want to talk about their platform because they can't. The ones that do get ridiculed because it's so ridiculous, like Ocasio-Cortez out there in New York. What is her platform? I'm going to give you everything. I'm going to give you free health care. I'm going to pay off your college loans. You're going to get a free college education. Free, free, free. Right? She sounds like a furniture store going out of business. We'll provide a free TV with every sofa you buy. That bullshit. You know, you've all known about those kind of stories. That's how she sounds. She sounds like a salesman. I think she'd give that woman a plaid jacket, right? Carnation on her lapel and put her in a plaid jacket. It's the same thing. Do you remember Joe Isuzu? This Isuzu can go 55 miles an hour in 2 seconds. He's lying. Remember that? All the Democrats are a bunch of Joe Isuzus. Selling you stuff that doesn't exist for no money And then when they get elected and the hook bites, like it did with Barack Obama, then all of a sudden you wake up and you go, oh my God, we got to get rid of this guy. And it takes you 8 years to get rid of him. And in the meantime, guy train wrecks your economy. That's what's coming. You elect Democrats in the fall, you can forget about any of these gains that we've gotten in the last 2 years. You might as well pack up and move to Mexico because it's going to be the same country. Hillary Clinton gets in office, you might as well move to Honduras because it's coming. You want to see what it looks like? Look at any major city run by the Democrats. Look at Detroit. Look at Chicago. Look at San Francisco. Look at Portland where you got Antifa running the streets. You want that in your country, in your city, in your state? Be my guest, not me. I'm getting ready to head for the hills just in case, right? That's the America that the Democrats are bringing you. That's what all the name-calling brings you. You better get out and vote. I keep telling people that. Oh, I don't like this Republican candidate. They're not my candidate of choice. They're not conservative enough for me. They're not passing my purity test. Bullshit. Get out and vote, man. Do not vote for anybody with a D in front of their name. Vote for an R. No matter how bad that guy is. I don't care if that guy's a crook. He's going to be better than a Democrat because they're going to bring you tax increases. They're going to bring you all kinds of horrors. And it's very simple. There's proof. All they do is name call. It's not like they have a platform to run on. You elect them. You elect them at your own risk. And you don't vote Republican in this fall. If you don't get out and vote on election day, if you don't do it right now with an early ballot, and this is what I always say to people, vote now. Don't get in that line. You'll just get frustrated and hurt when you find that these ballot boxes have all been shut down by the Democrat leaders in that state and you can't find a ballot box that's open. Better vote now. Vote Republican. You vote Democrat, you're out of your mind. You're voting for name calling and hate. We're out of time. Don't fall for the trap. Don't fall for the hypocrisy, all right? Look at the facts. Do you ever see a Democrat tell you, look at facts? No, you never see a Democrat look at that. They just say, he's lying. He's a racist. He's a child molester. He's a misogynist. Show me the proof. Oh, we can't. Brett Kavanaugh, he's a rapist. He isn't even accused of rape by the person accusing him. He's a rapist. Where's the proof? I don't have any. Mob rule. We'll be back tomorrow. Take care, folks. Have a good one.
My heart skips skipping a beat. You're not close enough, so that space between you and me, let's lose it. The way you're dancing, swaying to the music, girl, that body and how you move it. Every time you cross my mind, girl, I lose it.
Alexa, play the Country Heat playlist.
Okay.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.